Welcome, finally, to VentureCast 27. I'm Craig Severson of Grunt Media.
Indeed, finally. This is David Hornick from August Capital, and we are back.
A long hiatus, not planned as long. Well, it wasn't planned to be as long as it was.
No, we recorded the show while we were out and about at the TechCrunch 40.
We did record a show. We didn't release that show.
Yeah, we just, you know, that's like a, what is it when we have the tapes that yeah, the band doesn't produce?
Yeah, the basement tapes.
Yeah, so we'd love to, you know, someday those things will be a collector's edition.
Right. Yeah, so for all of you who we bugged at the TechCrunch 40, thank you. Sorry. Things got out of hand.
If you had said something really interesting, we might have listened.
They did say something. It was interesting. We had some good stuff.
Oh, yeah, we chatted with Gabe. Gabe was a riot.
Yes. Mark Jeffrey of Mahalo and all sorts of interesting people. But things got out of hand schedule-wise for both of us.
And yeah, you were off touring and speaking and making and doing.
Where do we begin? It's been since August.
Holy cow.
Yeah, since our last show. But thank you for everyone out there who has been very supportive.
And also known as pestering us to get back to it.
But it's great to hear from all of you and to know they're out there. I mean, I was approached by a lot of people when I was at the podcast expo saying that they listened to VentureCast. So thank all of you for coming up and saying that. And
so what'd you do?
I was saying, why are you listening to a Venture Capital podcast? I mean, you're
crazy?
A podcaster. What do you care?
Oh, like, please. It's genius.
Yeah, right.
Dripping with juniors.
You're questioning why someone would listen to VentureCast? I mean,
well, that crowd. I mean, I thought, you know, it'd be more of a like a investment type crowd or
all right. No, you know, we don't talk about investment.
That's true.
What did you talk about it? You did the podcast expo. Did you do
yes.
the Here's How to Make a Good Podcast thing?
No, I didn't. I did two talks. One was the day before, a group called the Podcast Academy does day-long trainings for.
Yep.
And so I did a piece that I entitled New Media Old School. And it was pretty much an analysis of what are the differences between new and old media. That's boring. But what are the differences from a production perspective? Because the distribution thing, we know there is this huge difference, and that's what everyone's up in arms about. That's where a lot of big money is going to be made. But I was looking at it more of a kind of an analysis of the memes of the old media, like what we thought of as movies and television, and then kind of everything else, you know, documentaries and corporate and all that kind of thing. And seeing how things are sort of smooshing together in the new media realm, but there's still going to be a huge need for old media things. Like, for instance, I feel television as an industry, as a content producing industry, is still very viable.
I hope so, because I love television.
Yeah, television's great. Television's getting better, I think, certainly because I've been able to experience it online without commercials and without interruption. So it's far more of a narrative, you know, a real story for me. But guys like me and my small little production companies like Grunt Media, we're never going to do a Lost or a Heroes. There's just no way.
Yeah, you can't afford it.
Can't afford it, and kind of don't want to. But that need for that middle-level content's always going to be there, and there's always going to be the need for film and for the feature and for the long program, the long contained program, and also the physical experience of a theater. It's still viable to me. I think that the theaters are going to be fine if they catch on.
Well, maybe we should have, you know, VentureCast Theater, and we can get
VentureCast
salons.
Yeah.
Welcome to VentureCast Theater.
It'll be very bad.
Oh, Mr. Bumbles. No, I was thinking we could like have the salons, you know, and you, instead of listening to VentureCast on your own, we could gather up, you know, like groups of people, and then they could all kibitz. Like, oh, no, Les Hornick. You know, throw
kibitz
stuff
cast.
At the, you know.
Oh, tomatoes.
So this idea of production and kind of production quality.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons we were distracted is that we were off at this conference that I hosted called The Lobby. And, you know, we haven't really talked about it, and that's because it's been, you know, the whole...
By definition.
Yeah, it was off the record, and it remains off the record. I mean, I think that the reason that it was a successful event to a certain extent is that it was a quiet little conference, as I've described it. And Craig here was the creative director and heavily involved, and the two of us were sort of busily working on it. But one of the things that I thought totally worked was this idea that people would introduce themselves by creating these introductory videos, right? So And the idea basically was, look, if you give me an introductory video, hi, I'm David Hornick and blah, 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 blah. And then in advance of the conference, everybody gets to see these videos and see everybody introduce themselves. Then there'll be more intimacy. There'll be a sense of who everybody is when you get to the conference.
Exactly.
And what was interesting to me was, so we ended up with just shy of what, like 120 mm-hmm. of the 150-ish people made these videos. And they were varying degrees of production value. As a general matter, the ones that had high production value, I think, were compelling, partially because I think people thought through them a lot. And so they were sort of, they were entertaining and they were, you know, planned. More carefully planned and those sorts of things. But some of the ones that weren't, some of the ones that were just someone with a camera and a dog and a camera and kids or whatever were great. They were completely compelling. And it's exactly this point, right?
Yes.
That the medium can impact the message. On the other hand, the message may be more important than the medium.
Yes.
And so you have to pick the right medium and the right message and et cetera. And so it was really fascinating to watch it. But as a general matter, those of you planning events in the future, it worked. If you have a group of people who are game for creating content and making these video introductions or even audio introductions would be fine, a slideshow, whatever, something to kind of introduce you to who is going to be there. I thought that worked really well.
Sounds like you're at my talk. I mean, one of the points I was making was, is this, it's a special alchemy of how do you match the production quality with your audience, with your message, with the life of the medium itself, with the media itself. And it's a very subtle thing, and it's not always great picture quality is necessary. At the same time, if your content's really bad and you have great pictures, it's also going to be bad.
Yeah.
So it's really about, you know, content is still king, but we have this opportunity in this new media space that we have all these different ways we can express it and it'll be appropriate. So that's why in these introductory videos for the lobby is, you know, a lot of us use, I used a, you know, webcam on my laptop.
Right. Totally fine.
Because for the meme and for what it was, and that I had to get it out quickly as well, it totally worked in that particular context.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So this event, this thing that consumed many, many hours of our collective lives and many of the hours between sort of midnight and three for me, what is interesting to me really was this question of it. From the outset, it has been those attending had been told, look, the content of what is said here is for here. It's not for elsewhere. And so even though this is a blogging world and lots of people in the blogging world were there, right?
Yes.
I venture to guess that third or a half of the people there maintain some kind of blogging and or, you know, publishing presence.
Right.
And so to tell those people, hey, while you're here, you do me a favor.
Yeah.
Don't be writing about this was interesting.
Yeah.
It wasn't without controversy, Craig.
But I think it worked. I mean, I was impressed with how people have really respected that. I mean, these are professional people. And so, you know, it's not surprising.
On the other hand, do you think it worked in the sense that it made it a better experience because people felt like it really wasn't going to be blogged about? Or do you think that, you know, people just sort of respected the request and said, fine?
I think it was probably only 20% of the fact that it wasn't going to be blogged. I think the actual setting of the conference itself, the idea behind it, the spirit of it, accounted for most of that openness.
Gotcha.
And so it was a small part of it because no one's going to spill sensitive information. They don't want to do that not only for themselves, but for the person listening. They don't want them to be exposed to that information because that, you know,
it's not burns.
It's not good for them either. But no, I think.
I hate that sensitive information, particularly in the sensitive areas. That's very. I do think that was the interesting question, right? Is there this middle ground information, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to go there as the head of new media for, you know, some big media company, a big movie studio or a record company, and then tell on what terms you'd be willing to license your content in a way that you wouldn't, that you otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah.
So I didn't expect those sorts of things. But I do think that there are ways of discussing things more openly. You know, a session about, you know, X kind of content or distribution or M&A or whatever, where people talk about things in a way where they otherwise probably wouldn't, right?
Right.
Where they, if you were sitting on the stage for sure of Web 2.0 or demo or whatever, you know what you're saying is being reflected out into the world. And in this instance, the idea was to make sure people knew that it wasn't.
Was not.
And I think to a certain extent.
Even at the subtle level, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, I think there was some skepticism about whether that would in fact be the case. And maybe next year, people will then say, oh, you know, actually people this stuff really didn't make its way out into the universe. And so now I can even say more. Now I can move that line even higher. And that would be cool, because I do think that that was the idea. You know, the whole idea of this conference, as you know all too well, was to try and nurture that conversation, that we go to these conferences because we want to have more interesting conversations and we want to build deeper relationships with people with whom we already have a relationship, or people we've never met before but have certain affinity or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think getting the right set of people and creating the right environment for that is crucial. And, you know, it was, I don't think that it was perfect. On the other hand, I do think that it went a pretty good way, a goodly way
towards
you know, getting people to really engage, which was cool.
So in general, I should describe what the conference was for those who didn't know. In general, it was
Don't cross the line or I'll have to zap you.
You know what? I'm one of those big proponents of, no, I'm not going to say who was there or anything, but it was an invite conference that you invited a certain crowd to come.
Well, don't blame me.
No, I actually credit you because that was the notes of the composition. I mean, that was your thing. You're the connector, as Malcolm Gladwell would say. I mean, that's like you did the ultimate connector job.
Thank you, Malcolm.
Yes. But I mean, you chose this group with this idea in mind, with this idea of conversation, of sharing ideas, of the industries that they're in, of the people they are, because you know them all, you know, how they would fit into this mix. And to me, that was probably the most interesting part of the whole thing, was that mix, that choice that you curated, as it were.
Super tricky. And I did, you know, look, to an extent, I definitely curated it. On the other hand, I got lots of input from lots of great people. And it's interesting, actually, that I think as a general matter, this was a group of impressive optimists. I think it was an incredibly optimistic crowd. And the few people who are by their nature pessimistic, when they express that pessimism, it was like cold water. I mean, it was just amazing. And it wasn't that people were being stupid. It's not like we were sitting around and being unrealistic. On the other hand, as between explaining something in the positive light versus the negative light, we were way better off with people who wanted to describe things that would be great to do, as opposed to hear the stupid things you shouldn't do, right? I think that what worked was that most of the people who showed up really were of that frame of mind, like are excited about the future of media, are excited about the opportunities ahead of us for our own companies, for the connection with these other people's companies and how we might bring those things together. And so, you know, that's great. I think that was great. You know, what originally I had envisioned this thing, I used to describe it as, hey, you get together the 30-something crowd, you know, that'd be really great. The 30-somethings, you know, maybe the 20-something, 20 and 30-somethings, whatever. So now that I'm 39, I had to abandon that because I could only go for a year.
Exactly.
You know, and then I was out.
I can't go to my own conference.
Darn it. It was sort of the same thing when people said, you know, who should you invite? When I asked people, who should I invite? And they said, well, no VCs, no lawyers, no. And I was like, well, so you've described me.
Yeah.
That's really not that helpful.
Thanks a lot.
I'm, you know, because I'm the host. How can I don't get to go? That seems crazy. So anyway, all right, enough about this conference.
No,
you know, there are other things that are happening.
Yes. But I mean, to finish the description.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. But then this group gathered for 3 days, effectively, in Hawaii, in a spot. And we basically hung out and had a lot of unstructured conversation. There were no speakers. Nobody came and gave a presentation. I didn't see one PowerPoint.
Right.
They might have been there and they could have used it, but I don't think it really wasn't in the spirit. People signed up to give, quote, presentations, but it was mostly just leading a conversation that led somewhere. And then a lot of conversations, not in the formal structure, but just because we were in this isolated place, we weren't surrounded by a big city, we weren't distracted by business, as it were.
Wi-Fi sucked.
Wi-Fi sucks. That's right. And it was the beach on Hawaii. It was a beautiful spot. And hours and hours and hours of hanging out, talking, meeting people. And it was just a very successful idea, a lot of fun. And actually it was very constructive too. For those, you know, those of you who have to put this down as a expense account,
Thank you.
Okay.
I was about to say that.
It was not a boondoggle.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is, and look, I think lots of people got a bunch of grief for this. And particularly since it was the first time the event was held and, you know, it was really like, I'm not going to say a whole lot about what's going to happen, but you really should participate. There was some heartburn in big companies in particular where you had to say to your boss, who was the COO of big media company X, hey, this really isn't just me going to Hawaii. There was a lot of sensitivity around that. And the thing that I think is great is that everybody left sort of saying, this really was a business conference. I understand that why people can see and have a concern about the idea that sitting on the beach in Hawaii, it has a feel like, oh, well, we're just going out to play. On the other hand, the set of conversations you have, yeah, we could have had them in a conference room in Akron. But they would have been different conversations. And people would have been less inclined to come, and they would have been less inclined to hang out and open up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've actually talked to lots of people who got business done. So I can say unequivocally.
Yeah, a lot of business done.
I said at the outset, if deals were not done at the lobby, that I would refund everyone's money. Now, I'm grateful they were done, because that would have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to refund everyone's money. You know, I heard distribution deals that got done, and content deals that got done, and conversations. And, you know, who knows? Maybe someone will buy or sell a company. I don't. In the future, stuff got done. Real stuff, that real tangible, valuable things. And the feedback I got from people was, hey, you were right. Now, look, I'm not claiming to be a genius here. This is that.
No, because it's obvious. So you don't
have to. Right, exactly. You were right. Oh, that I'm a genius?
Yes.
No, the idea was obvious. That the important part of a conference is the lobby. That the lobby is the conversation, and the conversation is what's the valuable piece. And so cutting out, you know, Rupert Murdoch, is Rupert Murdoch, it's kind of cool to be in the same room as Rupert Murdoch. But
that's all you are.
But did Rupert really say that much,
right?
Did Rupert say that much? And wouldn't it have been more interesting now if Rupert had been in Hawaii with us and sat in a room and had a conversation?
Yeah.
You know, think about that. Now, that would be great. And
we had those. I mean, we had those Rupert types.
Yeah.
Were just there and
hanging out, chatting.
And even if they didn't say a lot, they would make a point or two in a conversation that was like, wow, that's really interesting.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Nicely done. Yeah, so I think totally it'll be interesting to see next year if there are more. You know, if the Ruperts of this world say, hey, okay, I'm interested.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we'll see.
I think all the other part of the success was the mix of people wasn't all Ruperts. That the people you brought in were from all over the map, from age and from position and from career-wise. I mean, I think that part was also very interesting, too. It was definitely a high-end group. And that was a good part of it, was that you really had this sense of trust that the person there would honor the whole idea of the...
Of not making you look stupid.
Well, not making you look
you
stupid,
never
not
look
blogging.
Stupid, right? Right? Don't blog about what I say.
Yeah.
Don't out me. Don't make me look dumb. I'm here to, here to engage in a conversation like everyone else.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. So, and there's not much online about it because that was part of the deal. You put a post up on VentureBlog that gave a text
description.
Yeah, just
a very gentle...
And then we just talked about it now.
I hope nobody views... And see, again, this is sort of the challenge of the line drawing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that nobody listens to this and says, well, David, you said it was off the record and you've just spent however many minutes chatting about the experience.
Well, it was the experience.
Yeah.
The experience can't be off the record.
Right.
That
it's
would
like,
be silly.
It's like patent law, right? Or copyright.
Yeah.
In copyright, it turns out, you can copyright words, but you can't copyright ideas.
Right.
So this is the idea. We're not trying to copyright the idea, and so therefore we're not trying to keep it off the record. But the stuff, the content of this, of these phrases and all that would have been otherwise copyright protected.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the line.
Mm.
That which is protectable by copyright shall not be republished.
Uh-huh.
That which is not is publishable. I'm going to think about that.
That's an interesting framework to put it around.
God, I'm an IP nerd.
Love it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But if you didn't want to talk about it, then it would become this private, secretive.
Yeah, it wasn't a party. It wasn't like a secret. Right. It wasn't a club.
This wasn't
like
Skull and Bones.
Yeah, right, exactly. And nobody was spanked or
you weren't there.
I wasn't, again, hey, what happens in Hawaii stays in Hawaii.
No, I'm joking. But yes, not much sleep was had.
No,
and for good reason, because
it was
so much fun.
Yeah, well, it was too,
and engaging.
There you have it.
Indeed. So now we're going to be back to our normal lives.
Boring stuff, that's all. Yeah.
David's going to be a VC, I'm going to be a media guy. We're not going to be conference producers.
Right.
But also,
as
you said in VentureBlog to the executive producer, like, totally kicked ass, and Leah.
Leah Lorenzano. So any of you who don't know Leah... You know, we bow before Leah. She's just a spectacular,
rocks.
Both a spectacular individual and a spectacular at what she does. And she made it happen.
And her team, they were just great.
Yes, indeedy. And the fact that they would even contemplate doing this with us again is just like,
mind blowing.
Glutton for punishment. Talk about. Because all right, we got to move on. Enough of this.
Yeah.
Open social. That's what I have to say to you.
That's what you have to say?
I don't know. That seems to be like...
Are you open to being social?
You've
been social for a long time.
I say open social.
So this is the Facebook squeeze?
Yeah, it's right. Like, this is the smashing the walls open.
You got to come in, man. You're going to be all alone out there.
It's very interesting. It's very interesting.
So is it like an idea for an open API language? Is that kind of...
Well, there's no official word. Mm-hmm. There's sort of an official word, because if you go to Mark Andreessen's blog, you can sort of see what he's doing with Ning and how he's participating. And some of the other partners, so LinkedIn is a partner, Reid Hoffman and his team, mm-hmm. They're involved, and a number of other big open, interesting social networks are involved in this process of trying to create a joint API that allows you to build on top of the social graph. So I officially declare a defeat. I have tried and tried not to use this goddamn term social graph. I hate it.
I've never heard it.
You don't know this awful social graph term? So social graph.
I guess I shouldn't like it.
So the goodly there I am with the goodly. The fine folks of Facebook have used this term social graph to describe your relationships, these sets of relationships that are mapped out within their community.
Like a demograph or a psychograph,
right?
This is a social
graph. So a social graph is, you know, you're my friend and you're my friend and
how much
your
of a friend?
Friends, etc. And so I've long argued and
I hate the word.
Isn't it terrible?
Yeah.
Social graph, terrible. But anyway, I'm going to use it because I'm sorry to say, it has come to mean.
You're propagating it now.
The underlying
social
infrastructure of these social networks.
Okay.
Which I have always argued, for a long time I've argued that this idea, this social infrastructure, will be an underlying aspect of a broad set of applications.
Yes.
Because I'm a genius. Because it was because
yet.
I think it was obvious, and then lots of people did it, and now what they're doing is basically exploding that idea, uh-huh. basically saying, look, you should not have to recreate this social graph across multiple places. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have to keep recreating it, and you shouldn't. And if there's an application that is dependent upon the social graph, you should be able to apply the social graph that you have in one location to that application by simply using this API.
Well, you know, that makes sense.
Doesn't it?
It does. Now that
I
think about it.
That's open social.
When I think about who do I have, and now that I'm just learning this term, but like who's in my LinkedIn group and who's in my Facebook group, and there's been a lot of discussion how people are like, oh, I've been migrating, you know, from here to there, and this I'd use for that, and this I use for that, and they seem real close.
Yep.
But to apply this particular set of, quote, standard or metrics or containers or...
Containers, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's hey, let's say, you know, so Mark Pincus, he has a number of applications that are growing quite quickly on the Facebook platform. And in particular, the poker one has grown really well. And the idea is, hey, why can't I play poker with my friends? You can play poker with your friends. You install this application on Facebook, you invite your friends in, they install the application, and then you play, boom, Texas Hold'em with your friends online using this application. Yeah, so now what would happen if Mark wants to then have that application work on other networks, he'd have to then go negotiate a deal and figure out how to integrate that with Bebo. So say Bebo was going to have a thing, then he'd have to go to Bebo and he'd have to get their interface, and how do I find out who are your friends and all this stuff? And what Open Social is saying is, look, there should be a set of clear APIs that allow you to draw upon this social graph and say, who are your friends, and invite them in to play the game.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting question will be, can you play across networks, right? If someone's sitting in LinkedIn and someone's sitting in Facebook and someone's sitting in a Ning network, can they all be invited in the application, and can you see the Ning people within Facebook or within LinkedIn or whatever?
So it's kind of the old IM issue.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's this whole how do you create sort of consistency and a standard and et cetera. I don't know what the answer is to that yet.
Yeah.
But what I believe Google is trying to do, uh-huh. and my understanding is, by the way, that this is Joe Krause. So Joe Krause and Graham from JotSpot, Google bought Jot. Mm-hmm. These guys came in, and then this became an important initiative for the company, and those guys have headed it up, as I understand. I'll do more reading, but if that's the case, it's in good hands, because they're super smart, really understand and appreciate this stuff. And the idea is, look, if Facebook has this walled garden, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's AOL in the sense that it's this massive body of people and growing who are living in this platform.
Right.
And yes, they've opened up the application space, but they haven't opened up the platform. They don't allow you to export your social graph. They don't let you take out data and use it in other contexts. It has to stay in Facebook. So I believe what Google has done is said, okay, if that's what you're going to do, fine. We're going to do the opposite. We're going to smash down all of the walls around everything else. And so your walled garden has a certain number of millions of users. I think it's 40 some odd million and growing rapidly. We are everything else.
Yeah.
Now, it's not everything else because MySpace, I think, is going to create its own experience. Bebo's working on its own experience. But all these other things that add up to a whole lot are now just smashing down the walls and saying, hey, this set of joint APIs will allow you to create applications across our networks. And then they're just as big or bigger and growing just as quickly or more quickly. And
no, strategically, it's really brilliant, actually, because the whole problem with a lot of these companies, and even ranted about it a few months ago, is things come and things go. I mean, Facebook is hot now. I mean, a few months ago, we were talking about MySpace, and, you know, back in the day, we were talking about GeoCities or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, how does that work? And I know companies reach a critical mass and then they sort of, you know, like Friendster, it still lives. It's still a viable business. Maybe it's not huge, but it kind of lives. But it seems like a real risk. But this idea to me seems like for the companies that are existing on this platform, I think it's really powerful because they can still maintain an identity, but they'll have the strength of the group. And it kind of, in some ways, will establish them as stronger players. I think it would encourage less people coming in. I have to think about this a little bit more, but newcomers.
It absolutely should strengthen its constituent members.
Yes.
By saying, look, as a single platform, let's say you have 10 million users on your platform.
Yeah.
Right. And so how many resources would an individual company commit to develop on top of that platform if you opened it up? I don't know. But, you know, 10 million is a relatively large number, but not massive.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's say that you all are applying the same open API, mm-hmm. and when you develop an application, it applies to 200 million users as opposed to the 10 million
mm-hmm.
by aggregating all these up together. Now you say, gee, I think I actually will spend my resources building on those set of networks as opposed to Facebook.
Yes, right.
And I really think that's a little bit about what it is. Or as opposed to, you know,
a
destination or
mm-hmm.
build your own. Yeah.
Right.
So it's very clever.
Right.
It's clever.
I like
those
it.
Google people.
These business people, they think of everything.
It's moving so quickly. We were actually meeting this afternoon with our investors. Venture capitalists actually have investors, and mm-hmm. one of our investors, a couple of the representatives of that fund, came to meet with us and said, you know, what trends do you see, et cetera? And we basically, as a general matter, we don't invest behind trends. We just don't. We think that you invest in smart people who happen to be doing something interesting at a point in time.
Yeah.
But I did discuss this idea that the exploding of the social graph to inform a set of applications, and how are these applications going to grow on top of these things, and will individual applications be sufficiently interesting to receive funding? I don't know, although mm-hmm. there are plenty of venture capitalists who are funding them. You know, on the other hand, will platforms that live on top of these sets of applications, you know, advertising mm-hmm. and metrics or tracking or monetization or all these things, you know, will those things thrive in this environment? Yeah, man, let me invest in those, right? If you could create, a simplified PayPal experience that lives on top of the social graph in open social and in using FBML, the Facebook markup language.
Thank you.
That'd be interesting, don't
mm-hmm.
you think?
I
now you're going to have to compete with PayPal because I'm sure PayPal's working on it. And you're mm-hmm. going to have to compete with Google because Google, if they're not working on it, you know, like crazy. What are you? Get on with that. That's what you should be doing. So anyway, what I said to these investors of mine is that I think this is interesting and I will be watching it and it will be evolving. And, you know, we have various investments that have an impact, have been impacted and will continue to impact this ecosystem. And it's all very exciting, Craig.
It's
good to be back. We're back.
Yeah, I think it's great for the API writers. I mean, I don't think, like you said, I don't think there's a huge business there, but there's going to be new business there for people writing cool little, like Mark.
But they're guys, you know, look, Mark would say, hey, I'm making a bunch of money and I'm going to grow a bunch of these and then they're going to aggregate and we're going to build a big business. And if you look at iLike, you know, iLike says, hey, look, this is an interesting application. It's going to be as big or bigger than Last.fm, and Last.fm was sold for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now that they can go across not just Facebook, but Facebook and these sets of open social app platforms,
mm-hmm.
and then hopefully Bebo does create an interface, and hopefully MySpace does create an interface, and it'll take some work to make them, and it'll take some work to figure out how can you monetize these experiences within other people's experiences.
Right.
Right. That's an interesting challenge. It's the same challenge we had with online video.
Yes.
How do you post video and
still have that problem.
Right? We still do.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm here
That's
to
why
tell you.
Craig does product placement. If you notice in all Craig's videos, he's smoking Cool 100s.
Cool
100s. Can you imagine? You could say, ooh, minty fresh.
About that aspect ratio.
I'm telling you, product placement.
Yeah. French Mate TV.
Two words for you. Product placement.
No.
Did you see Survivor? I'm a huge fan of Survivor. And I'm a huge fan of their completely shameless product placement. And they had the best one yet. Usually it's like Doritos, and you're like, you starve for 4 days, like 40 days or whatever, and then they give you a bag of Doritos, and it's this orgasmic experience as you eat the Doritos, and they get on your face and go, oh, this is the best tasting snack food I've ever had in my life. This time, to top all others, they had Charmin. And it was like, oh, a Western toilet. Literally, that was the phrase. Yay, a Western toilet.
Oh, my
God.
And
this comfy, smushy, soft Charmin for our tushes or whatever. And they were so excited about toilet paper. Now here I am. I'm perpetuating this ridiculousness by saying it.
It's shameless.
But it was genius. I love that.
Shameless. I mean, I hate it when people do that. I'm happy that I sound so great in my Heil PR40 microphone.
Yeah, and I should say, that's a nice, beautiful microphone.
That's a beautiful mic. This is my first time.
Brand new?
Yep. I've had it all summer. We haven't recorded.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't. I've been dying.
You've been talking about it. You have been telling me about this. Isn't this the microphone
you've been
telling about? So you finally invested in this microphone? Mm-hmm. And who makes this microphone?
This is made by Mr. Heil himself.
Heil.
H-E-I-L. This is the PR40.
And this is the Heil PR40. Mm-hmm. And is this a condenser microphone?
This is not. It's a dynamic.
Dynamic. No need for a preamp. It does its thing.
He's all dynamic.
My son got this condenser mic. He has a couple of condenser mics, mm-hmm. and they frustrate me a great deal. I think the condenser mic is a frustrating thing.
It's wiggy. You gotta be careful.
So this
likes rooms. It likes to hear the rooms. It loves rooms.
That's we don't need that.
Don't need rooms.
Here at VentureCast, we're all about the recording technology.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Because when we sing, we want it to be crystal clear.
But we don't. So that's a
what
good
if
thing.
We were
but
to
if
sing?
We
Craig?
Don't sing. We won't sing.
Oh, see, you sang it to the new microphone.
Yes.
I want the new microphone next week so I can try singing.
Oh, you want one of these?
No, you're never gonna.
I'm not. I don't sound.
You're such a pig.
I don't sound good on yours.
I know.
I tried.
I know, but look how pretty that is.
I know, and it's very impressive. Anyway,
you have a better voice for radio, so I'll let you have the better microphone.
But on that mic, I sound crappy. You sound good. It's a very sensitive.
Sensitive
sort of thing.
Well, what I mean, we've been at this a while.
Have
anything
we?
Else?
Oh, we were only 30 some minutes.
Oh, really? That's because
we talked before.
We shouldn't do that. I think we should have no relationship off the air. When you're done, pack up and move on. Don't
get out
be
of my
talking
life.
To me. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, so much has happened since we were away, but
we
can't cover it.
No, if it's too old, we're just going to move on.
Yeah, I mean, the Microsoft Facebook thing, I think that all
that's
just a deal.
You're right.
They just want an ad deal. That's all
it is. That's what it is. And along with that ad deal, it required them to put in a couple hundred million? 250?
Yeah.
What was it? But
that's their Pepsi budget.
You know what that is? That's the interest on yesterday's cash.
Yeah. So I don't think Facebook, I mean, 15 billion, whatever. It's not. But it's a deal. And that's all it is. That's what I'm talking about.
So I'm on this board. I'm on this board with this great venture capitalist named John Connors. And he's with a group called Ignition Partners and Ignition Capital. Oh, sorry, John. Up in Seattle. It's a bunch of former Microsoft guys. And so we were talking about, in this company, we were talking about the investment policy. But this is the important stuff you do at board meetings, is that you have to ratify an investment policy because we just closed a big round of financing, have $25 million. What do you do with the $25 million while you're waiting to spend it? Well, you have to have an investment policy. Mm-hmm. So John, you made some comment about the investment policy, to which I said, rudely, give me a break. Like, wait, John, what do you know from an investment policy? Now, I should point out that John was the former CFO of Microsoft. So I think I'm much more qualified to comment on the investment policy than John, who had a trading floor in his organization. But anyway, I just, once again, I thought I was hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious. And I'm sure he was really amused too.
You can tell by the scowl on his face and the cold shoulder and the.
But I should point out that I then said I cede all authority to John to make the decision about our investment policy because, if there's an intellectual property question, I'm happy to take lead. But on an investment policy, the former CFO of Microsoft, he gets to take lead.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy I am. I'm a sharer.
Microsoft's, it's an interesting company.
They had a good quarter.
They had a great quarter.
And it was noticed, and the price went up.
Yep.
You know, it's been a while
up
since Microsoft. But no, it's been a while since Microsoft has had a quarter that did well, that caught a sufficient attention of the market,
yeah,
that people actually, you know, bought based on that success. Because, I mean,
the stock price
it's like such a big economy.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, the economy of Microsoft is the economy of small nations.
Yes, right.
It's hard to move that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy when I have little companies and they're making 12 cents to have a material impact. Like, hey, we made 24 cents.
That's
holy crap, 200x. I mean, 200 times growth. See, again, this is why John should make the investment decision.
Right, you're not the math guy.
I can't even, you know,
you
I can't even
before.
Do, what's that, 2x, 200%, 200x?
200% X. It's a lot more. We did a lot more.
How much? What do I own? I can't.
What's my cut?
I can't keep track of these things.
But I mean, yeah. So they did all right. But then, like, they're like the ketchup company. Not in terms of food, but I mean, even the beginning, they were sort of trying to be IBM, and then then they were trying to be like Apple. Now they're trying to be like Google, and now they're trying to be Facebook.
Come
and
off
the,
it, everyone. Always
like.
They created. We wouldn't have a PC industry but for Microsoft. Do you remember that?
I remember.
Do you like your Do you like your laptop?
I
do
love
you
my laptop?
All right, then thank Microsoft, my friend, because without them, you'd have no laptop.
No, we would have had a laptop.
Oh please!
Oh please!
They
nothing.
Unified the platform and made it possible to write cool applications across a bunch. This is OpenSocial. They unified the platform. They made it possible to write to multiple hardware platforms with a single experience and therefore encourage the creation of interesting and important applications.
Well, Apple did the same thing.
No, they did it after. They were nowhere. Microsoft made it happen on a business level, on a scale level. You owe them your debt of gratitude. And I'm not just saying this because my partner Dave was the only private investor in Microsoft and still sits on their board.
Okay.
Although that is a perfectly good reason to say it.
This segment of VentureCast brought to you by Microsoft.
That's right. Product placement. We have put down our cigarettes and we now are holding Microsoft Vista.
We're holding Vista. Yeah, that huge success.
All right. I shouldn't have said that.
I know. Because.
And plus, I've just lost all credibility because I've just touted Microsoft. But I should say.
Well, it's an interesting. I find it
Microsoft's a powerful company, and they've
There's no doubt.
They've done incredibly interesting stuff, and been. But you look at Excel. Tell me, Excel isn't like a hugely powerful, important platform?
Probably the most.
Okay, so there you go.
But that's about.
What about Exchange?
Don't use it. I don't know.
Oh,
that'll work for
you
companies.
Must understand the scale and power of Exchange.
Yeah.
It's a half of all mailboxes in the world, or something.
Really?
Or something.
Yeah.
I got that statistic recently. Someone today, literally today, in a
the
pitch.
Or something part.
Today, I was pitched and I was told that 1.2 billion mailboxes in webmail collectively, 1.2 billion mailboxes on Exchange.
Wow.
You know, as a venture capitalist, I have to, as a general matter, take what entrepreneurs say to me as truth.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I will now express it as truth until someone tells me otherwise.
Okay.
But it's just like Wikipedia.
Yes, right. But along the lines of platforms,
yes,
I gotta say, I've been leopardized for the past.
Oh, have you been?
Holy cow! I mean, holy cow!
All right, what is it?
It's
what is it?
Freaking awesome!
Yeah, what?
There's a lot underneath.
Underneath
the
hood.
You
can't even tell me.
I can tell you. I'm giving you a minute.
Oh,
I'm preparing the argument. You're so impatient. It's been a long time coming, and it's not
that long though. Think about it. How long did it take
Apple
them to get Leopard out?
2.5 Was it 2 years?
Was it even 2 years?
Yeah, longer than usual. Usually it's a year.
Yeah, that was longer for them, but you know, certainly was no Vista.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
I know you're saying
no
that.
Longhorn.
No Longhorn. Fuck. No
Longhorn. Longhorn died on the long journey across the prairie.
Exactly, and it's still.
No, see,
Vista's
look,
still built on a house of
first
cards.
I made Microsoft friends, and now I'm making Microsoft enemies.
Yeah.
I'm an equal opportunity kind of a guy.
Yeah, you're generous.
Our new sponsor is Apple.
Apple Inc.
All right, so what
as
is
if
it?
They need it?
All right,
from
I'll stop. I'll stop. Because you know, you do know that I'm all Apple all the time.
I know you are. But, you know, I had a developer copy a few months ago, back in May, actually, because I was at WWDC, et cetera, et cetera. And it was like, I put it on one of my other machines. I was like, you know, that's kind of cool. But it was beta, so it was still kind of wonky. So, I was not like super excited because I've seen some of the features and whatever. But now that I've put it on, and starting to dig into the smaller stuff, it's really, really, really nice. The main thing that I'm using is actually, the thing I didn't think I would use is spaces, which is just different windows for different sections of your screen for different purposes.
Okay.
So like I can create a space of my mail.
So it's a little bit like creating VMs, virtual machines, within the desktop space?
Yes.
So now you switch the upper left corner is a virtual machine for mail. The upper right is X. And
could be. Then that's not how it's triggered, but
okay.
Yes, that's the idea.
So you can see I haven't yet upgraded.
No, yeah, I can see that.
William! That's William's our IT guy. He's a god.
Yes.
He has to deal with like such insanity in this office. Every platform, every form, every machine. It's like absurd. Anyway, I'm hopeful that William will upgrade me.
Yeah. Well, it's only been a few days, but I've been working on a project right now that involves three or four apps that I have to monkey with at one time, which is not uncommon for a production person.
Yep.
But this is not a video thing. This is actually I'm writing a white paper of all things.
But you know how to write?
I can write with my fingers, though. Oh, I can type. Right. Pencil, you don't.
All right.
But I can just go from, let's say, Photoshop, and then I want to go into Pages, let's say. And I just go to the other space. And it's not like I have windows on top of each other. Like I don't have clutter of windows. It's like whoosh.
So this is a little bit like if you created separate users on the account.
Almost,
you
yes.
can have instant change from one user to the next.
So exactly.
And as they already have in users, when you log in as a new user, it's the that user's preferences and
right.
desktop and
right.
applications that are open. And
right.
so you can do this, can pivot on a dime.
Because it's the same user. You're the same
right.
user. It's
but
just
you
now
create,
you have these sub environments.
David A, David B, David C.
Kind of, yeah. So you can create as many as you want, I yep. think. I haven't pushed it yet.
The
default is 4.
Memory will become a problem.
But today I've been experimenting, and we'll see how long it goes. But I've actually just created 12 spaces. And I put every app
You're
on
a madman.
I put every app on a different space. So
seriously.
It's totally working.
Seriously.
Totally working well.
Now I know why you're so winded. Because you've gone crazy.
Oh, it's awesome. And the new mail app is really, really cool.
Oh, see,
integrated
RSS
feed.
I do want to check that out. I do want to check out the new app. I do at home. Here, I will admit that I run Outlook on top of Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
I run Parallels on one screen on my desktop and Mac on running Windows and Exchange. And I run Mac on the other side.
Yeah.
But at home, I got the laptops, and the laptops, basically, I run in Mac. I'm not...
Mm-hmm.
And so I do use the Mac Mail, and I love Mac Mail.
It's
I love
so much
Mac
better.
Mail. Search is way better. Oh my God, not way better, like crazy better.
Yeah.
It's just silly
yeah.
how much better it is. That's what I'm saying.
The new improvements are really subtle, All but right. really, I mean, but really, really cool. And then
that'd
there's
be
a
great.
Built-in RSS reader in Mail. So it's kind of Mail's become the, I think, what you guys call Exchange or whatever that product is that might, it's like where everything comes together, like notes
about?
And to-do lists and calendars. There's this deep integration going on.
Is calendar working? I'm telling you, the one thing that Apple has failed miserably on is calendar.
I think it's a little better. There's one little interface issue, one extra click they added. It's interesting. I mean, that the things that people are talking about with Vista are pretty catastrophic. Like, it doesn't work. And all the discussions with that on the Apple podcast that I'm on or whatever, the biggest problem is they made that doc translucent. It's too translucent. That's like the big issue.
Yeah,
it's like, I mean, people spend hours talking about these little tiny problems because there aren't any other ones. The rest of it
that's
is
good. That's cool.
It's really,
I
got to
tell
solid.
You, I mean, this was unbelievable. My father, my father was in Hawaii at this conference with us.
That's right. I didn't meet him.
Did you meet him?
No, I meant to,
him?
Too.
Well, anyway, Jerry Hornick was there.
Hi.
Hanging on the beach, reading Mac magazine
Dang.
Or something. What, and he was there the day that they released Leopard.
Right.
And he said to me,
was it
David?
Apple Store?
Yeah, he said, David, is there an Apple Store on the Big Island? And I said, no.
No.
Dad, there's not an Apple Store. Darn, how can I get Leopard today? I was like, you've got to be kidding.
No,
but, you know, I understood because he lives in Cambridge, so he was going to have a long flight back, and I know that he would have played with it the entire way.
Oh, yeah.
And so instead he had to wait. But I know that he has already upgraded. I think he, like, woke up the next morning when he landed. And quickly, must get it.
Yeah.
Must get Leopard.
I know. I tried to resist because I have this deadline, and A new operating system is a big investment in time, no matter what, no matter how smoothly it works.
Yes, and putting aside that it might be a distraction, almost also might screw up everything in your machine and make it slightly more difficult to actually produce work product.
Yes, but I
hate that.
I did research, and I have friends, and I checked it out.
Friends in high places.
Well, no, I mean, I asked them, are you running this and that? Because just the certain apps for this particular project, I want to make sure. And actually, I had my other machine on the beta as sort of my guinea pig. So I'd throw apps on there and see if they crashed, and they never actually did, even in the old version. So,
well,
it's cool.
I'm getting it.
Yep, you should be getting it.
I'm getting it.
All right. Are we done?
I don't know,
We're done.
That's it?
Yeah.
You're done with me.
We've said enough.
All right, well.
We've jammered on
enough. I'm glad to be back, and we are committing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To be back every other week. We're back. We're focused.
Yep.
I have, I'm going to China for 10 days in December.
Okay.
So we're going to have to, that's the only thing I know, the only impediment I know of that should possibly get in our way. So we'll plan around that.
Okay.
And make sure that through the new year,
I'm going to be traveling Christmas. And if anyone's going to Blog World next week, 8th, 9th, I think, 7th, 8th, 9th, somewhere there in Vegas.
In Vegas? Blog World's in Vegas?
Yes. It should be. It's an
Write about it.
It's an interesting conference. Anyway, I'm speaking one of those days.
I clearly have lost my blogging cred.
Have you?
I'm no longer asked to speak at blog events.
Because you have too many blogs?
It's sad. No, I just, Venture Blog has been neglected, and
I'm
coming up, I think, on the 5-year anniversary. So maybe I should. Don't you think it'd be good to crescendo into 5 years at least, so I can pretend like I'm a real blogger again,
rather than crash land through it?
I mean, that would be sad.
Yeah,
that'd be sad. So I think I'll try it. But and plus the conference thing is, it should be in a lull of planning now.
Yeah,
maybe I can focus on some other things
like investments.
Investments, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if you have any companies out there that you think are, interesting, and you want me to hear about them, Hornick@AugustCap.com.
There it is.
Send me email, Hornick@AugustCap.com. You could also send me mail within the Facebook platform. I seem to be getting pitched within Facebook with increasing frequency.
Wow.
But the easiest way, Hornick, HORNIK. At AugustCap.com. Please tell me that there are no bots that are going to listen to this, my email, and spam the crap out of me.
There aren't. We're not there yet.
Entrepreneurs, I'm happy to hear from bots, less so.
And thanks again to CashFly for providing bandwidth for our show, product placement. Actually, that's not product placement. That's just, they didn't even ask us.
Right, forget that. Hey, Craig.
Yes.
You going to put this up on CashFly?
Why, yes, David, because they have an excellent content delivery network.
You know what's crazy is how darned reliable they are.
And fast, too.
Wow. Yes. All right, I'll be going to CashFly to check out VentureCast.
You might want to do that, but remember, it's CACHEFLY.com.
Thanks, Craig.
You're welcome.
Hawaii's volcanoes have a fascination for all. It is quite true that the natives and tourists alike run to and not from the eruptions. Yet, they all have a deep respect for the fire goddess Pele, who, according to legend, is responsible for the volcanic activities. For they will occur whenever she returns to one of her many homes on the slopes of Mauna Loa.